Hey, Jakey, let me pull you up here. Invite to speak. What's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up, Matt? How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
That's good. Is it busy busy evening of calls for you tonight?
Say that again?
A busy evening of calls for you tonight. I just
Yeah.
listening in on the
Yeah.
CN3 call.
Yeah, as you know, we had the V3 call and usually just like Australia time zone, like trying to be to the Australia time zone always makes things a little bit interesting. You push it like, a lot of stuff gets like the beginning of the day and then towards the end, good amount of calls.
Yeah, it's a rough compatible time zone.
Yeah, I think you guys should just move somewhere else. Like literally anywhere.
If we grab like a whole bunch of tugboats, maybe we can just drag Australia.
Like I'm saying, like there's gotta be a better way.
Oh, well.
Like there just has to be. You guys just can't be where you are. So you can figure that out and get back to me how it goes.
You just have to move to Australia, Matt.
No. I'm okay. Anytime I think about it just sounds scary, just because you guys got that whole like craziness going on in the world with the all your wildlife and such. Maybe this is a very American point of view.
Hey, you guys aren't running with intro elevator music to Spaces calls while people join the room.
Say that again?
I was just reflecting. We had some great feedback on our last call with you, where we were in that elevator music to warm the call up while we waited for people to join the call.
Oh,
Do you
yeah.
remember?
You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really well received.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think.
Synthetics needs their own tune. Like, someone should put it on Fiverr or something.
I think Alexander actually already did that, to be honest with you. Like,
All right.
Alexander, the community member, I think he has like a synthetics rap or something that he made.
Oh. We should play that.
Yeah, so right now I'm just waiting for the big guy Millie to show up. And from there, we should be in a good spot.
Can you give us a few bars of the rap, Matt, off the top of your head?
I'm not gonna do that. But that was a great try. That was a great try, Jakey. That was that, I applaud the effort. Okay, here, wait. Let's just make sure everyone makes it to this call as well.
We had a really good speaking of Millie, we had a really good walkthrough with the Exotics products on our town hall, on our, sorry, office hours earlier this week. It was super useful walkthrough, and I saw that someone set up an exotics market yesterday for total synthetics fees will take over Bitcoins by the end of July.
Yeah, that was Kane's Twitter, on the back of these massive atomic swap volumes without having, integration of every I'm gonna say the word every aggregator yet. So excited to see where that goes with a ton more aggregators jumping onto it. Here, let's just make sure that Millie's here and such. Millie is here. Let me add him as a speaker. Hey everyone, sorry, Matt kind of posted the wrong link in our announcement channel. I was stuck listening to us our previous Squarespace. Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I kind of rubbed our call at first and then noticed but didn't want to say anything after they picked me. So I was just slowly backtracking what I had done. So yeah, these Twitter links, they always get me, man. Seriously. So here, let's just make sure.
Multitasking.
Yeah, multitasking at its finest. But yeah, here, we'll give people a couple minutes to just jump in here. I'm gonna reping our Discord, which is gonna make everyone really happy. And then yeah. So, but
Great
I
time
was
with D Hedge guys here.
yeah, awesome to have you guys around. I remember, God, guys, do you remember back like it was like 9, 10 months ago now, when I first joined your call and was like, hey guys, can you please come to Optimism? like before anything else. This was a long time ago. I don't know if I should remember.
Was that was sooner than 9 months, Matt? I think that was that might have been December.
8 months.
8 months.
No. It was before I came on as a CC. That's the thing.
Because we had our launch trading comp December 16. Sorry, we announced it December 16. So we would have been.
It was probably like September, October.
Possibly. It's been a long journey.
Yeah, I think it might have been not long after like DH V2 was launched. That was in August. So it might have been a month or two after that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I
mean, to the hedges, you know, credit, like realistically at the time, you know, there was a lot of constraints with what you could trade on Optimism and also like there wasn't much Uniswap liquidity. There wasn't many other dApps or just synthetics, and we didn't have perpetuals life. So like there wasn't a whole ton of amount that could be done. So to their credit, I mean, they had to go where.
Oh, you know, nothing against them. It was just funny that like at the time, you know, like that's like 9 months ago now, you know, or 10 months ago, whatever. It's crazy.
It's like yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, we should be pretty good to kick it off now that the correct links are now circulating around into the world. Sorry about that, folks. But, let's see. Can you guys hear me? Am I all good?
Yeah, that is clear.
Okay, cool. I just lost the feedback for a second. But, thanks everyone for coming here today. I appreciate it. This is, Synthetics Ambassadors put on Spartan Spaces every now and again when it comes to, you know, trying to bring on projects that we want to promote and synergies that we want to promote and things of that nature. So here today we have D-Hedge and we also have Tauros Finance. So I'll let the D-Hedge guys do a quick intro. And just like a quick little, like, what D-Hedge does, and then we'll go into what Tauros Finance does as well.
I'll jump in first. Just give a quick overview. I'm Jake. I'm head of growth and marketing at DH. And just to add to confusion, there's another core contributor, Jake, on the call with us today. So that's always a challenge. Excited. Like just putting my 5 cents, pretty pumped to have this product that we're going to talk through today live. As Matt was alluding to, it's been a journey. The product was live on L1 for a while and now we've finally brought it to Optimism. So very excited to see the community use it. I'll pass over to you, Jake.
Oh yeah. Hello everyone. I'm a core contributor at D-Hedge. I'm mostly on the contracts team. And, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, g'day everyone. I'm Matt, or also known as Taminator on Discord. And that, I'm community manager for D-Hedge. And just helping out with the comms and growth. Yeah, super excited for this integration. Yeah, we've obviously, D-Hedge has been working closely with Synthetics since inception, and it's just really great to continue to explore the ways we can help the Synthetics stakers with this sort of debt hedging tool, especially now we're live on Optimism, which has been everyone's been screaming for probably almost 12 months now.
And maybe if we just do a quick background of what D-Hedge is, for those on the call who might not be familiar, and apologize for my dog barking in the background. She's barely here and she hasn't been out for a walk yet. So D-Hedge is an asset management platform launched in August 2020, and with very close ties to Synthetics. And it's now sort of expanded onto Polygon and Optimism, obviously, and has, I think, a current count about 1,300 different funds on the platform, run by over 1,000 different manager wallets. So the protocol's growing and we're enjoying the ride and excited to continue the relationship with Synthetics.
Awesome. Maybe you guys could just give a brief rundown of Tauros as well.
Yeah, sure. So Tauros Finance is an incubated protocol that D-Hedge launched. We did a soft launch in sort of February and then a more comprehensive launch a few months ago. It's a specific protocol for structured products and automated strategies that run now on Polygon and Optimism that tie in very nicely with the D-Hedge fund service. So there's different products, like there's rich tokens. So you can buy, I'm in Polygon at the moment, one click access to 1x, 2x and 3x bear or bull tokens for ETH and Bitcoin. There's also some managed liquidity services where we could do managed concentrated liquidity on Uniswap for Ethereum. There's a stablecoin yield product, which is stable liquidity around specific stablecoin pairs on Optimism and Polygon. And now, obviously, the DSNX service, which we're going to get through today.
Yeah, awesome. So let's actually let's hop into the, you know, the meat and potatoes of the call, as we can call it. So let's talk a little bit about, on your side, how this, you know, your solution is able to automatically hedge against the synthetic step pool. And then we'll get, like, I can talk a little bit on how users can actually interact with it.
Yeah, Jake, do you want to take that one?
Sure. So what would you explain that?
Just, you know, just explain, like, you know, what protocols that DHedge interacts with to make this possible, how they avoid utilizing depth pool assets for it as well.
Yeah.
Because just for context, when DHedge did a debt hedging pool, I think it was like the first debt hedging pool. You're probably talking like a year back at this point, maybe a year and a half back.
Yeah.
But DHedge's first debt hedging pool, what it did was it used synths to hedge. But the issue with that sort of implementation is that you're only exacerbating the problem of the skew of the debt pool, because you're just adding more assets, long or short,
you're taking
or
out more
whatever
debt.
It is at the time.
Yeah, you're trying to offset the debt by taking out more debt.
Yeah.
So the way the new, well, since version 2 of the debt mirrors work is that we use Aave to, you know, we either buy the assets that are in the debt pool. So if the debt pool owes 500 Ethereum, we buy 500 Ethereum. Sometimes what we can do is when we buy that 500 Ethereum, we can lend it and make some extra yield. So that's cool. And then sometimes, if we need to short an asset, what we do is we use Aave to short it. So we'll buy that asset and then sell it, immediately and get the capital back for that asset. So we'll have a debt on that asset. So this just, mirrors the debts of the debt pool essentially. And you guys have provided us with an API, that allows us to see what's, you know, in the debt pool at any particular point in time. And we just, listen to that for events, and we have a bot in the background that trades on behalf of the synthetic debt pool account and, yeah, buys the assets it needs to. So I guess at its core, DHedge is a set of smart contracts that allows for permissionless pools of assets to be managed by a manager. And then the manager can also delegate some behaviors to a trader account. So the trader account might be able to, you know, just trade assets, but they can't claim fees or anything like that. And for most of them, the call, they'll know with DHedge, you always have the right as an investor to exit the pool at any time. So if you have some shares in the pool and you want to exit, you can just come along and redeem those shares for the underlying assets. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah, that's probably mostly it on the side of the implementation. Let me actually share a, or rather pin a tweet that we actually just recently put out regarding how an individual user would actually use this this solution. So pretty much what it boils down to is in the synthetic staking app, an individual staker would head over to, they would go over to debt and then manage in the UI. There's links in the blog post that I just posted as well. And then from there, what a user would do is they would input the amount of SUSD that they would like to have hedged by the DHedge debt mirror index. And then they're able to just, you know, purchase into the pool immediately. It's as simple as that, as we like to say. We've tried to make this as simple a process as possible. So it's just like a very simplified, like, one-click solution to this staking problem. When a user wants to withdraw, they just have to head over to toros.finance to do so. So that's really all it looks like on what a user has to do. We can probably lead into some questions about, like, how close the approximation is to the debt pool and things like that. Like, could you talk a little bit about that, Jakey? Like,
if we rewind a little bit, so when you come and stake SNX, right, you're essentially collateralizing, you're saying, I want to take a position in the debt pool, and I'm collateralizing the debt pool with my SNX. And for in return for doing that, you receive SUSD, which is basically the value of your assets at the time you collateralize, give whatever the currency ratio is. So you get this SUSD, and then you can either sell that SUSD for something else, or you can exchange it for other SINs, right? But eventually this SUSD comes back onto the market and it's used within the Synthetix ecosystem. And so if you stake SNX and you want to offset, or you want to hedge your debt, you take that SUSD that you've just received and you put it into the debt pool, or the debt mirror pool. Debt mirror pool will go and buy the assets outside of Synthetix that are in the debt pool, which we covered a little bit earlier. Now, some of what the debt pool is the counterparty to can't be hedged inside the mirror. So, for instance, you guys have futures markets, right? So you guys have which are run on margin. And, like, deposit SUSD, and then you can take out, you know, a futures position on, you know, S oil or something like that. Clearly, we can't hedge these positions, so that part of the debt pool's debt is not hedged within the debt pool at the moment. If, for instance, there was some, you know, non-synthetic oil token on Polygon or on Optimism, we could potentially incorporate some of that into the debt pool as, you know, a hedge. But yeah, that does that kind of answer your question, Matt?
Yeah,
regardless, yeah, you know, how definitely accurate it is. So, like, normal assets. So, for instance, a debt pool I know has some Chainlink in it. Like, some people have some S Chainlink. So we hold Chainlink in the debt mirror. These kinds of normal assets, we can just hold. Anything that we need to short that's available on Aave, we can short. But yeah, there are some risks around it. So say, for instance, you deposit some SNX, you take your SUSD, you deposit it into the debt pool, you receive your debt pool tokens or your debt hedge pool tokens, the SNX. When at some point in the future you'll say, okay, well, my C ratio's dropped, I actually need to sell some of my debt mirror tokens to get more SUSD to pay down my debt, or to buy more SNX, to stake more SNX, to bring my C ratio back up. But at that particular point in time, you know, the SNX tokens might not be exactly at parity to your debt because of futures and stuff like that that we can't completely hedge. The good news is the bulk of the debt pool isn't in these assets, so the hedge is pretty accurate.
Yeah, I think it's also probably important to note that an individual user, you know, probably wouldn't be able to hedge, you know, some of these exotic, or rather we can call them like long tail markets, unless they went off of Optimism as well. And even then, they may face, you know, some degree of difficulties. So the current status of DHedge's tool is, I would say, as perfect as you'd be able to make it yourself, you know, while understanding that there definitely are trade-offs on what assets are currently in Optimism.
I think it's also worth to mention that, like, realistically, these other, like, exotic positions you're mentioning, they make a very small part of the depot. And for the futures particularly, there's a funding rate which actually incentivizes people to take the opposite side of these trades and neutralize these markets. And the majority of the debt traditionally has been in the form of, like, outstanding ETH, either in the wrapper or, like, people longing spot ETH through our spot sense. So I feel like, you know, the debt pool pretty much, I mean the debt mirror token pretty much captures, like, the majority of what it needs to like a pretty high degree. Like, I don't know the exact percentage what it would be, but, like, I assume it's pretty high.
Yeah, it just depends on, like, uptake of futures and stuff like that, and how large these markets are, I guess.
Yeah,
but as you, like, say, like, there is an incentive to try and balance out those markets, and then you've got the fees on top of that, so they may not need to be hedged.
For the most part,
the futures are designed so that you don't need to hedge it. That's sort of like the selling point of futures.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, even with something like futures, you know, it's still part of a debt pool, so you guys would the debt pool, so you'd be able to get, like, the approximation. But if it was obviously a futures market like Ape or something like that, that's a different story. But yet again, very small parts of the debt pool that are completely okay to approximate, and that's pretty much what every other shaker that I talk to is going to do anyway, especially with like when they're hedging.
So, I kind of had a question a little bit more into the weeds of like how this, I understand it, but like for the audience, basically like when you say people put their SUSD into this pool, the pool is not actually holding SUSD, correct? Like it sells the SUSD into the market and then uses like other stable coins to buy other assets, right? Could you just get a little bit into that?
Sure. So originally the DSNX didn't accept SUSD, but that meant that SNX stakers would have to swap that SUSD themselves to something like USDC. So what we did is just to make things a little bit easier is the DSNX now accepts SUSD. Once it hits the pool, like an event is triggered, you pick that event up, it gets swapped to, you know, whatever assets we need to buy. So sometimes maybe there's an intermediary asset. So maybe it goes like SUSD, USDC, maybe it deposits that USDC into Aave and borrows some ETH or, you know, buy some ETH or buy some Chainlink or yeah. So yeah, it's pretty much just a nice to have, sure, of DSNX. It never holds any SUSD. It's just for deposits.
Yeah.
This is similar to like other pools, like other active managed pools, like, you know, managers might have, you know, only BTC and ETH in their pool, but they accept USDC as a deposit asset, and then the manager just picks that up and allocates that within their mandate.
It's also probably, like, good to note here that that's not, like, a decision on DHedge's side as well. You guys probably go into that a little bit more, too. But as of right now, SUSD is not enabled as collateral on Aave. So for all these interactions to work, you would need the stablecoin to be enabled as collateral. And even when it will be enabled as collateral, like SUSD, it is only going to have a supply cap of $10 million. I say only, that is a pretty good figure, but still, that's also like an important thing to note. It's not like DHedge said, no, we're not going to use SUSD for any of this. They have to use USDC.
Which is also kind of a good thing, right? Because as stakers, you kind of do want to like, SUSD to be, you know, available in pools where people can buy it and use it to trade and, you know, to create fees and generate fees. So I had just one other question. Actually, this one I don't know the answer to, and I think the audience is probably wondering as well. When you buy and sell assets, like the automated bot, when it does it, does it go through an aggregator or does it have to swap through manually through different routes?
It usually goes through an aggregator.
Okay, cool. And is that like 1inch on Optimism or?
1inch on Optimism, UniV3. Depends what's configured, depends where the best route is. We have a system.
So it doesn't just go out and buy like an illiquid pool, some ETH, find the best pricing for ETH.
So it can only operate within the contracts that are whitelisted within DHedge. So if you have like a pool on Optimism, a DHedge pool on Optimism, the DSNX is just a DHedge pool that operates within the boundaries of the DHedge protocol. So on Optimism, we support 1inch, UniV3. I think that's it for as far as like swaps are concerned. And so, yeah, it looks at the price of the asset, the Chainlink price of the asset that we're buying, and then make sure that we receive the correct amount. So we use the Chainlink price to set our expected amounts. So say we're swapping from like SUSD to USDC, we'll look and check out what the Chainlink price is and we'll make sure that we're receiving an amount that's at parity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And by we, when you say that, like just for the audience, you mean like the bot that does it on the back end?
The bot that does it on the back end.
Okay, yeah, so I think an important thing to probably go into now is like what the future of something like this looks like. Are there any ways to make a tool like this, let's say, more capital efficient? Like if you could utilize something like leverage on chain or something, you know, along those lines?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Gotcha. What I would think is like you basically have to like, they'd have to whitelist like another leveraged like exchange, like something like Perp Protocol on Optimism, and like if that gets whitelisted on the DHedge like on protocol level, then you know they could essentially, you know, mirror, and the liquidity is sufficient, they can mirror like the positions through that as well. Like I'm assuming, right? That would make sense.
Yeah, definitely. We've been looking into a few different options as far as future integrations are concerned. Perp's definitely on the list.
Yeah, and like just like this capital efficient question really comes more from like, you know, maybe not having to deploy all of the assets, maybe utilizing some degree of leverage and then using some of the other assets to just like, you know, farm with, you know, on Aave or whatever, you know, or in the stablecoin farming, like the stablecoin yield thing that is on Taurus as well. So that's more of like where my question's going with this.
Yeah, so like I said, like a lot of the time with assets that we just have in the pool, we're them to work, so we deposit them and lend them through Aave. But there's no reason that if there are better markets to, you know, farm on, we couldn't look to integrate those.
Gotcha.
If you guys in the synthetics ecosystem find, you know, a market like that, you're welcome to bring it to us and we can look at integrating it.
It is an interesting idea for a service though. Like not just like, I mean, this is a very pure one-to-one service to give people security that they're not, the debt isn't going to end up wrecking them when they go to unstake. But it is an interesting idea for a service where you could have like debt hedging squared, where it hedged your debt and also generated some yield for the hedger as well.
Yeah, that's pretty much like, you know, where I'm going with that side of the question. But when it comes to the current synthetic debt hedge, that's live and utilizes Aave, would there be a way to figure out like, if there's any yield generation happening right now with the assets that are on Aave for someone? Like, you know, if they're net positive by a little bit of APY from just, you know, lending out assets?
Oh, we display the yield that each asset's generating from being deposited in Aave in the interface. But that yield goes to, as I understand, Jake, keeping the pool balanced with the synthetics debt pool.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's not net positive, Matt. And when we try to replicate, well, the synthetics interface tries to demonstrate that through the widget you've got on the debt page, where you can see the ratio of the debt tracking to the debt pool.
Gotcha. No, makes sense. Just kind of exploring, you know, some interesting parts of this in my head. And as of right now, could you guys break down like the fee structure of this product, if there is one?
Well, at the moment there's zero fees on both pools, on Polygon and on Optimism. So it's a free service for anyone who wants to use it. And that's the current state of affairs. There might be scope. I put a brief poll in one of our Discord channels on whether people would be open to a fee on it if there was sort of staking returns that came back from people being in the pool, just as sort of like an idea. But as at the moment, it's zero performance fees and zero management fees.
Awesome. Why don't we take this opportunity to jump in a little bit onto like the de-hedge side of things, the de-hedge world, and let's call it SNX. Why don't you tell us about like your fund manager? Sorry, guys, my microphone just died. So why don't we just hop into like a little bit about the de-hedge side and like, you know, how the fund managers have been performing recently or, you know, throughout its lifetime. And I see, like, I'm looking on your website right now. I see some of the top asset managers. They're more simplistic. But why don't we talk about a little bit of like the more riskier strategies and like how they've performed over time?
Matthew, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Sorry.
We can hear you.
Yeah. I think there was some technical issues with my microphone before. Sorry, what was the question? Just about the active managers on the platform from like the beginning. Is that sort of the question?
Yeah, like how the managers have been performing, how you've seen them, like which funds typically get like the most attention, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think, obviously, I don't think not many people have been performing the last few months in this sort of recent sort of bear market. But yeah, going into sort of last year, we had quite a lot of pools perform quite significant total returns. Some of the bigger ones was like Convex Monster, who was quite big on going long and short on ETH and Bitcoin, and then just sort of holding US dollars to hedge in the sort of the downside. So he did very well, and I think his highest AUM was I think about three million at one point. And there was quite another, just trying to think some of the other ones. There was another one. Jesse Livermore had a really big fund as well. He did really well. He was just pure like ETH, so just went into and out of ETH with the sort of market kind of swings.
So he did a more active trading strategy.
Yeah, he just really looked at those swings when it changed sort of rapidly, either up or down. I think originally he tried to do some shorting with like the inverse tokens when they were a part of synthetics, but just found they were a bit sort of inefficient the way they worked. So then just sort of changed to more just hedging into stables until the market sort of turned the other way and was quite successful in that sort of trading strategy.
But it's an interesting time on DHedge at the moment because we're seeing with the Optimism launch almost 6 months ago now, we're seeing some of the managers start to migrate their pools across from mainnet to Optimism for where they became inactive when gas prices sort of made trading on ETH a little bit not feasible from the volumes that these managers had. So we're starting to see that migration will go across to Optimism. So it's a really good time, one, for Tauros to launch on Optimism so that we can start offering those automated strategies to managers on Optimism as they receive them currently on Polygon. But it's also an interesting time for these managers to sort of either start fresh with a new fund or we're working on ways of retaining that manager track record that they've built up on mainnet and reflecting that in the front end for if they want to sort of keep the same name of the fund on a new chain. So that's we're looking at ways of doing that at the moment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And on that topic of Optimism and like sort of bridging these pools over, can you maybe go into detail? Like, I think I don't even know how this would work. Like, is DHedge integrated with bridges where they could just bridge funds from one chain to another?
Yeah, no, it's still sort of a concept at the moment. And to answer your question, Millie, no, we're not we don't use any bridges. But the current idea is that it would just be a front end modification, so that the front end would pull in the information from one chain and map it against the new trading activity. So everything stays on chain, but reflected through the front end in a way that looks as though it's seamless. But just to reiterate, it's still sort of a concept at the moment based on a couple of big managers that are looking to come across and wanting to bring that history across with them when they start on the new chain.
Interesting. And what is the process of adding new like whitelisted protocols to DHedge? Because I understand, like, realistically, like, I'm sure most of our audience understands how DHedge works. Can you give a brief background? But I'll just refresh them quickly. Like, these fund managers, they have very limited abilities what they could do with these funds. Like, they could put them into protocols and they could take them out. They can't really do like transfer these tokens out. They're very limited what they could do just for security purposes, which, you know, justifiably so. So I'm just like curious, like, how does the process of adding new whitelisted protocols work right now, and how do you guys see that developing over time?
Yeah, I can take this one. So generally what we look for is we look for protocols that will give managers or Tauros utility, so they're useful. And then we look at adoption of that protocol and look at the complexity of an integration. And so at the complexity of integration point, we look at how does this protocol work? Do they store the necessary information on chain? Do they expose the value of a position on chain? These sorts of things are necessary for DHedge to function. So within a pool, if there's an asset within a pool mixed with other assets, we need to be able to accurately value each of those assets within the pool. And so that's a really important part of being able to integrate with DHedge or DHedge integrate with a protocol. The other thing we need to be able to do is up until now, we've always promised investors just-in-time liquidity. So if you want to exit a pool, we must be able to return to the investor their portion of the assets inside the pool. So this means there can't be any assets in the pool that are locked up. This may change in the future. We may reintroduce redemption periods for some pool, or you know, there may be times where redemptions can't happen, but those pools, that hasn't happened yet, and we're trying to avoid that altogether. We look at, you know, can we integrate? What's the value proposition of the protocol to the managers and to Tauros? And you know, then what we do is we, essentially the way our protocol works is we have these things called contract guards and asset guards, and we write a contract guard that pretty much just specifies what a manager can do on that protocol and who they can do it on behalf of. So usually just the pool, right? So they can only take out, you know, an option under the pool's name, and they can only sell it back to the pool, as an example. And then the asset guard is, you know, what I talked about before. How do we value that asset in the context of all the other assets in the pool? And then how do we return part of that asset's value to an investor if they want to withdraw from a pool? And so that, of course, like, we need to write those contracts. We need to test those contracts. We need to audit those contracts. And so this takes time. And you can imagine, you know, we try and, you know, get in front of protocols that we want to integrate. So you know, like, try to start integrating them while they're in beta, or before they're released. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Probably the other important thing I'll just add is obviously this goes through governance as well. So we sort of would look at a possible implementation from our side, or it could be suggested from the community. So we sort of see if it's sort of plausible. But then yeah, that would go through the governance process to make sure that is what all the DAO members feel is beneficial for DHedge and Toros.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks for those answers. And honestly, like, let me do some shilling on your behalf. Like, realistically, like, there's a very good reason why you're, there's some cautious, why, you know, the protocol is cautious in terms of integrations, because, you know, for the most part, like, you know, we see how DeFi is, you know, can be not safe at times, right? And we, like, projects get exploited for, like, lots of funds. Even sometimes projects, you know, might not have a whole lot of funds. They might have, like, less than 8 figures in funds, maybe like only 7 figures under 10 million, and still they would get, you know, hackers somehow, you know, find a way to breach it and exploit funds. Whereas, you know, DHedge has been live now for, you know, close to almost 2 years, and it's like at the peak you guys had around around 40 million TVL, looking at DeFi Llama right now, and still have a pretty substantial amount of TVL. And, you know, knock on wood, there has not been any issues yet. Like, all the depositors have been able to redeem their funds whenever they want, you know. Whether pool managers perform well or not, like, that's part of the system. But for the most part, you know, DHedge has held up and has done, like, what it's supposed to do, and there's not been any kind of, like, a security issue. So, like, I just want to give that shout-out to you guys, and, like, the cautiousness is warranted, I guess. So when you say that, like, you kind of want to prioritize for protocols that allow for instant reclamation of their funds, so this will probably rule out any kind of project that has, like, sort of, like, a cool-down period, correct?
Yeah, effectively, that's the situation we're in now. And even, for instance, we're integrating with Lyra, right? At some points in time, you can't close a Lyra position, or, like, there's too much volatility. They have a few conditions. So we're looking at ways, like, how we best approach this. That's, like, heeding caution on, like, the investor's side, basically. So yeah, it's Adam. So for instance, what's a good example? Like Ribbon Finance, we probably couldn't integrate Ribbon because they have, you know, deposit periods and then redemption periods. That wouldn't work currently within our protocol. Everything needs kind of be atomic.
Right. I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because, like, I want to ask you about that, but it's interesting that you guys are, like, already looking into it. Of course you are. I'll just make it clear for the audience, like, when you mentioned that, there's two aspects to delays in Lyra. Like, there's one for, like, the LP who deposits funds into Lyra AMMs and, like, provides liquidity for these options. They are essentially, they're locked in for an extended period of time, usually 28 days. And then also, like, the traders, when you buy an option on the AMM, if that AMM skews too far in your favor or too far against your position, there's, like, these bounds where it's no longer tradable. Until it moves back into, like, a more neutral position. And that's what he's talking about, where he says that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there are these, I can fully understand your constraints. I just want to illustrate them for the audience.
No, that's awesome.
And yeah, just to echo your comments, Millie, appreciate the shout out to the security at DHedge. Just wanted to add in that the protocol's been fully audited twice in those almost 2 years. Yeah, zero funds lost in that period. So just to echo that comment.
And it's quite a feat, like, from a user perspective. Like, you know, it's a lot more complicated what DHedge is doing than just traditional, like, aggregators, right? Like, a yield aggregator is essentially just taking funds and, like, automatically, like, depositing into a pool and earns yield. Whereas on the D-Hedge, you're like, you're giving individual community members, people, like, this ability to use these funds, like, that are deposited in their pool, arbitrarily. Not fully arbitrarily, but, like, in terms of, like, from a speculative or trading perspective, kind of arbitrarily. So I think that, like, you know, is quite a feat, and it's not, like, easily reproducible. And obviously, like, I don't even think D-Hedge has, like, a lot of competition. Do you guys have any competition on that level?
Not really in the active management space. It's, as you said, a tricky thing to try to implement. There's competitors in the index token space, for instance. Like, if you look at a fund as a static ratio of assets, then you could include index tokens as a competitor. But from a purely active management space, then it's fairly unique.
Was it you, Millie, that I was talking to about dank pools?
I don't think
so. On the call last week?
Are you talking about the office hours?
Yeah. Like, the unrestricted pools?
Yeah, do you want to maybe go into that a little bit now?
No, on our community call last week, we were talking about having... One of the issues we have at D-Hedge is that managers can't move quickly into new protocols because we need to set up infrastructure within our contracts to allow it. So we need to write this contract guard, this asset guard. We need to understand the protocol. We need to understand how to value those assets. All this kind of stuff happens. And sometimes this means that, you know, managers miss out on being early to a protocol and earning really good rewards. And so we've discussed internally having certain types of pools have less restrictive boundaries. So, you know, being able to use protocols unrestricted, but you're still using the D-Hedge framework or protocol for managing investors, but without those investment restrictions. So, like, a free mandate. This introduces much more trust into, you know, the scenario, but this may work for some managers who are managing money on behalf of, you know, some people they know or something like that. They just want to use the tooling that D-Hedge provides as far as, you know, fees, distributions, allocation of capital, allocation of shares, this kind of stuff. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, on a conceptual level, like, you could probably think of so many different, you know, ways to get, you know, do some interesting stuff. And, like, I honestly think, like, you know, I like the pace you guys are going on. I think it's appropriate. And I'm pretty excited for, like, where it goes. Like, I remember when D-Hedge first launched, you know, even just the UI has improved, like, tremendously. Like, I'm sure you guys done so many optimizations you guys worked on. Probably can't get to, like, everything on the call, but, like, I mean, there's been a lot of improvements over time, and it's just been steady growth, in my opinion, even though, like, the TVL goes down, but that's mainly a factor of, like, you know, the asset prices in the pools, like ETH and Bitcoin and different stuff, which have, you know, declined over time. But yeah,
I guess just to readdress the point about, you know, teleporting funds from pools on one chain to another, it's actually quite a tricky operation. Like, of course, like, these pools are effectively contracts with addresses. They have some storage that records, you know, like, who owns what. It's very hard to teleport that kind of storage across chain. And so anybody that's familiar with how bridges work will understand that, like, you know, it's one thing to teleport one token across chain and settle that, but it's quite another thing to try and teleport the state of an entire contract through a bridge. And so, yeah, at the moment, it's more of like a manual, like, you investors have to manually transition their funds from pools across chain. And this also means that it's much more secure. They can use the bridge that they're familiar with. We don't introduce any bridge risk into our pools. And yeah, that's kind of been discussed pretty heavily within D-Hedge, like, the value proposition of trying to create some kind of, like, pool bridging system. It's just not there yet.
Yeah, and I would kind of agree with that, because realistically, like, you know, bridges in general are quite risky. Like, I know most of the people that I know that are really smart and understand DeFi well, they sort of, you know, say the same thing, that, like, realistically, bridges right now, the current technology around bridges is still not, like, proven to the degree they would like. And so, yeah, there definitely is that sort of, like, that risk factor. Matt, do you want to maybe turn it over to the audience for some questions at this point?
Yeah, definitely. If there's anything from the audience, raise your hand. Also, if you can't raise your hand or if you are on, you know, your laptop or something, then you're not going to be able to speak in the call, but also just DM me or anything like that on Discord or go to our GovCall chat on our Discord and put any questions there.
Yeah, let me take a look in our GovCall chat, actually.
What's happened with the synthetic teleportation? I remember there was, I think it's, is it ship 205 or 204? I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so realistically, it's quite a complex, like, on the same point that we were just talking about, like, just bridging and cross-chain stuff becomes really tricky on a protocol level, and it introduces a whole different, like, risk vector. And so there's very, Syntax is very cautious right now on how they approach that, even though, like, it is very much feasible. It's just the how they go about it. And realistically, like, I think that the roadmap, I think, is to basically wait for Chainlink to introduce their cross-chain messaging protocol and sort of go off that, because Chainlink has, like, this proven record of being, you know, quite rigorous in terms of testing and safety. Although we had that Luna incident just recently, which was was interesting with Chainlink, you know, unexpected. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I think that's the sort of the route they're taking. The core contributors have been thinking about.
Yeah, Millie hit the nail on the head on that one. It's a question of risk and all these other things. And at the end of the day, Chainlink is an infrastructure provider and has done a fantastic job at it. So leaning on them for the future of something like this is probably a better path to go for the synthetics community and stakers and so on and so forth. Because if there was some sort of issue, the dev pool would have to back it, or, you know, something like that would have to happen. I don't think stakers want to be in that position. But we actually do have Jeff, who wants to be a speaker, so let me pull him up.
While we're waiting for Jeff, I'll just say the DS and ACE token's been it's been pretty well received so far over the last 3 days since launching. I think that the pool's totally already hit 80 unique wallet invest from L2 stakers, so that's a pretty good result from such a short day of being live, duration of being live. So shout out to everyone on the call who has got involved in that token already.
Yeah, it's like second highest TVL on Optimus right now. I just a small fraction too.
Another interesting point I'll make up is the SNX debt mirror that we launched on Polygon last year has almost been one of the better performing pools. Obviously, the global synth composition is a pretty good indication of what is happening overall market at the moment, just as a little side note.
That's an alpha leak. Yeah, that's a good point there. That's an alpha leak.
There's actually a pretty big alpha leak that Matt is actually missing, which if anyone had been in the Matt Pro Trader Fund back when we launched the trading competition with D-Hedge back in the day, they, you know, would be you're not going to say the word in the green because
are you top 10, Matt?
Dude, I am number one all the time. Okay, I actually have no idea. Just to provide context to everyone on this call, I made a pool on D-Hedge when we did a trading competition, and I didn't do any trades during the competition, and still haven't done any trades to this day. And that was back in like November or so, like December. So that's a very high performing pool because it has 0% returns in a market that has, taken a little bit of a beating. So I actually am going to go check on that pool in a second, but I'll pass it over to Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. Good. To have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm just curious in regards with the smart contracts and the cost of that from the difference between layer one and layer two. What's, I guess, the difference with the cost with us transitioning? Well, we're obviously on Optimism now, but what's the overall sort of cost differences between layer one, layer two to grab your rewards?
Is that a question around gas fees? Yeah.
Yeah, gas fees. Yeah.
I think at the moment to do a transaction on Optimism using D-Hedge, it's around 50 US cents. I think just if you bring it back.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, that's massive. Yeah. because it used to cost, I mean, on layer one, it's an average of $40 to grab your transactions. When we're fully layer two, the question is, will that be a smooth transition? Will that be like a, will we have to do anything, or is it just going to be automatic?
I think at the moment, just to clarify, you can have, you can stake. Is it a static staking question, or is that using the D?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I can hop in on that. So
sure.
You're pretty much asking. Yeah. Thanks, Drew. You're pretty much asking when staking is, transitioned fully to layer two at some point.
Yep.
You know, will there need to be any sort of intervention by the actual user?
Yes.
The answer to that is, I'm going to say yes, but also all of this pending, you know, governance action. And just so you know, like, none of that has, been drawn out yet, or, you know, there haven't been comms on it as well.
Okay.
So if you'd like to, you know, burn your debt on L1 and transition L2, you can. But you can also wait on debt migration. And once that's prepared, and I think one of the key roadblocks has just passed, some final test with the SUSD bridge to allow SUSD to go from L1 to L2 and then L2 to L1 back in a completely fungible way. Some of those final tests are just being completed. So that's the,
cool.
I'll refer to it as the path to debt migration. But
cool.
No timelines on any of that as of right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
thank
just
you.
To add to that, just to be really direct to your question, like there will be, so when debt hedging, debt migration goes live, as Matt mentioned, you will have to do some interaction. It'll be minimal. And the point of it is so that the user interface for it is very smooth. And so, like, you know, it's as simple as, you know, when you go to claim every week and you fire a transaction, it'd be similar to that where you just, you know, you fire a few transactions and you're migrated to layer two. So it will be very smooth in that sense.
Yeah, that is it's a great point for Millie as well.
It's an interesting question, though, from the fact that does having automated hedging now on L2 make the two experiences now similar, as in staking L1 versus staking L2? Like, are there any differences anymore in sort of the features you have access to?
Yeah, so pretty much the difference between staking on L1 and L2 would just be the amount of fees that you would get from trading, and then the amount of fees that you would get for inflation. So just to go into that, you receive trading fees based on the chain that you're on. So if you're on L2, you'd get trading fees from futures and, you know, things of that realm. If you're on L1, you'd get it, you know, from the same set of, like, SYN swaps and atomic swaps and things of that nature. So that's the difference in, you know, how fees are distributed. But outside of that, also you get a different amount of inflation, different ratio of inflation based on if you're on Optimism or Ethereum mainnet.
And liquidation rewards, I suppose.
So when it comes to liquidation rewards, what was done most recently was when liquidations were done on L1, there was a lot more that were done on L1. The rewards were distributed to L1 stakers, and they were actually the rewards that L2 stakers were entitled to were binged to L2. So not really. Liquidations is kind of the... I'm going to call it like the black sheep of this equation, because when it comes to liquidations, everyone, you know, is assigned debt, pro rata, like instantly, you know, but some of the rewards take a little bit longer because they have to be bridged from L1 to L2 or L2 to L1, depending on, what chain has more liquidations occur.
Is it worth going over an example of like, an SNX staker when they don't hedge their debt at all, just holding SUSD? I'm sure you guys have a million examples of this happening over the past few years in Discord.
I was actually just gonna pass it over to Millie. But yeah, Millie, go for it, man.
Well, it could be rough, right? Like it could be very rough, and it's happened in many situations where, like, you know, the debt pool will move against you. Like you mentioned yourself, the alpha leak you gave. I'm looking at that Polygon debt mirror token right now on DHedge, and in the past 6 months it's up 23%, and compared to like everything else in the market, which is basically down, you know, the entire crypto market is down. And So, you know, like you said, like the people who are using synths, they definitely know what they're doing in, to a sense. And so, like, if you're not hedging those positions and, you know, the SNX price is moving against you, and let's say you're holding ETH, for example, or like you're long certain assets, or like, you know, you're not hedging fully and you're just like, you know, holding other tokens, you can get, yeah, you could definitely put yourself in a tough situation. Like I have, like myself, and I have been very poorly managing my debt over the years. And, it's, you know, it's been costly for me. But, yeah, so, like, realistically, it can be an issue. And like you mentioned, again, back to Alpha League, you know, that Demir index has been quite a good indicator on, like, how the market is moving. And if you're not hedging, it usually moves against you. And so it has a double effect. But realistically, just hold stable coins. I mean, you probably wouldn't be down a tremendous amount. But, again, like, you would be underperforming to some degree, except for when the pool's wrong, which is doesn't happen too often on a long time scale.
Yeah, I think we like a good way to look at this, where for a long time, at least this is probably going back 2 years ago, the synthetic step pool was very long Ethereum. Probably go back even further. The synthetic step pool was very long Ethereum. So what happened is, if some users maybe just forget to hedge in general, as ETH, you know, went through its run up, you know, up to something like 4,000 or so, those users were, you know, what I'm just going to pick out numbers, but let's say the debt pool was 70% long ETH. That introduces a pretty large problem for a staker who just saw ETH, you know, go from a couple hundred dollars to $4,000, and they didn't do anything in the interim. So using a solution like this from DHedge saves you from something like that, and allows you to be a lot more worry free when it comes to staking.
And at the mass point, also there was like a point where BTC had a huge run up, and the debt pool was like,
yep,
largely consists of BTC. And like, you know, unless you were holding wrapped Bitcoin, like you were, you know, your debt was suffering kind of. But the only thing was that like SNX price at that time was sort of performing really well too. But like, you know, in events where SNX price doesn't, you know, is flatter or doesn't perform so well, yeah, you could definitely be in some trouble. So the debt mirror index token is definitely very useful in that sense.
So I guess, Millie, a good example is say you staked 6 months ago and everything else remained equal, so the SNX price remained the same. You were saying, like, the performance of the DSNX is 23%. So if you weren't hedged, you would now be down 23%. You would need to make up that 23% with your own funds. But in the case of if you had have invested in DSNX, all you do is you take some of your DSNX, you sell some to get that extra 23%, you get your SUSD, and, you know, you burn some of your debt, or you buy more SNX and you stake. So you sell your DSNX, you get SUSD, you burn it, and that will reduce your debt. And then you're basically equal, if everything else remains equal, like the SNX price and stuff.
Correct. And even if the SNX price goes down, like what you would do, like you just mentioned, is you would just incrementally sell the debt mirror index every week when you need to claim. And so that way, you know, even as the next price goes down, you know, you're debt hedged, you're fully debt hedged. And so you essentially just burn your debt and you continue claiming and your C ratio remains stable. So, yeah, I mean, even if SNX price were to go down, you still would benefit from being very well hedged.
Yeah, all very important points. And, you know, there's probably people that you could look at, like Kane, who just put on their Twitter recently that they were, you know, that he was selling large amounts of other holdings to bring himself back up to 300% so he could claim. So it happens to everyone. It's not like this is something that only new users are going to utilize. I can tell you that, like, I'll personally be utilizing this feature. But yeah, so this isn't just like a new staker problem, you know. Sometimes people just get a little greedy and they start using their debt for other means, or they speculate with it, or whatever they do, they try to beat the debt pool, which people can still do, but this just introduces another option for people to utilize.
I think it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Absolutely, exactly. And you know, I just want to, sorry, make one other point, but like, I want people to understand that, like, you know, a 23% increase in debt, like in the debt mirror index token, I mean, to replicate that with stablecoin yields, you know, over 6 months, you'd have to be earning, you know, close to 50% APY on your stables, which is, you know, it's just, you can't find that right now in DeFi, right? So, like, you know, it's not a safe haven just to be in stablecoins. You know, to protect your position, you really need this tool. And, like, it's just a huge bonus for synthetics that is finally live now. Like, it's live on Optimism now.
Yeah, I was going to hop in and say, if you 5% stable yield in, like, you know, those good farms,
you know, toss that stuff out there on Twitter, you know. But 100%, it's
safe and not some
ride. Yeah, that's the next part of things. So find a stablecoin farm that follows the philosophies of DHedge and making sure that I can exit it when I want with the amount of assets that I started with, plus the yield, then I'm happy. But, you know, you're asking for a lot in this little checklist I developed. So, but yet again, you know, I tell everyone on this call to check out, the Dapp Mirror Index. It's super easy to use, and it's going to be a tool that I think, you know, many stakers are going to love to use and will rejoice, with now having it. I really can't wait to look back, you know, in a couple months and like see, you know, how many individual users have used it and what the TVL looks like at the time. So yeah, I think, we're going to be pretty happy people a couple months from now. So
unless, thank you again. Angry Discord messages.
Yeah. We always like to avoid angry Discord messages that, you know, interrupt our dinners, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think we can definitely wrap this up. Thank you so much, guys, from the DHedge side. We appreciate having you, and I'm excited to have you guys again on at some point in the future. We always try to do this every like 2 months or so. Maybe more regular. Guys, thank you so much.
If I could just do a quick every week at the moment, we're doing office hours on the DHedge Discord. We alternate Tuesdays and Thursdays, two different time zones to try to keep everyone with at least one time zone that's semi-compatible to them locally. So feel free to drop in. The next one will be next Thursday. So there'll be a event in our Discord if you want to smash the button to be reminded for that one. And also coming up, we're doing a lot of work at the moment internally on how DHT staking works. And so we're going to have a proposal coming out in the short term, which we're pretty excited about. So for those in the DHedge community that are interested, just pay attention to our socials and there'll be a proposal out shortly.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much. Keep an eye out for those announcements, everybody. Thank you to the audience for joining. Thank you, everyone at DHedge. Thank you, Jake. Thank you both the Jakes. Thank you, Timinator, Matt and Matt. Everyone, it was a pleasure. Thanks, audience, for joining. See you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks for hosting.
Have a good one, guys. Talk soon.
Thanks guys.